Okay, so we would like today to try to get a sense, philosophically, of where everything fits in. We started to begin this topic a little bit last week, but we'll recap a little bit and try to put it all in context. And our assumption is that the lumdus and the halacha that we started with, in terms of trying to figure out how to classify the act of shechita, is shechita a mitzvah? Is it something with its own inherent religious value? Or is it something that essentially reflects a negative principle, alav haba michlal aseh? Or is it maybe not even much of a principle at all, but something that only exists as a method to permit that which is otherwise inaccessible? And who is that mitzvah on? When does that mitzvah apply? So all of those details presumably reflect a hashkafic underpinning of what exactly is contained within the mitzvah or non-mitzvah. And we tried to figure out a little bit how we can see that in some of the suggested reasons and also in some of the implications that we have in the Chumash and in Shas and elsewhere in Chazal. So one point that we saw emphasized many times was the idea that this is rooted in concerns for Tzar Balei Chayim, that we assume that shechita is the most humane way to kill the animal, and that therefore the Torah is makbid on this, even b'di'evet, that even after the fact that the animal that we eat should have been killed in the most humane way possible, as we understand it. And we saw this is an idea that a number of the Rishonim reflect, the Rambam and Moreh Nevuchim, let's say for Achinuch, the Ramban in his commentary to Chumash, we mentioned the tshuva from the Chassam Sofer that understands the message of the bracha on shechita to reflect the theme of Tzar Balei Chayim. We talked about some other ways in which we find that representing itself, and that is clearly a theme. Although we also noted the question raised by the Yad HaLevi in his commentary to the Sefer HaMitzvah. So the Rambam says that if that's really what's going on, and he noted those who felt that this mitzvah is directed specifically to the shochet, that the one killing the animal has an obligation to do so in this minimizing of the Tzar Balei Chayim, and that's the whole theme here. So he raised the question, so why is it only in the context of animals that we'll be eating that we have such a directive? Why don't we find this elsewhere? And he questioned the whole concept. And we'll come back to that point. We also mentioned, as the Sefer HaChinuch highlights, that together with this, there is also the theme of avoiding dam, which our parsha last week continues with, and is clearly its own value with similar principles behind it. And the assumption being that shechita is also the most effective way of separating the dam from the animal, that was a major consideration as well. And that may have been present even in the context of Nechira, and that maybe Shechita incorporates that and more. And we also noted that there does seem to be a linkage to Kadshim, and that the Sefer Yireim understands that the mitzvah of Shechita's Kadshim is what's included here. We saw that the Ramban on Chumash understands Kasher Tzivisicha to link the mitzvah of Shechita's Chulin to Shechita's Kadshim. And we saw also that in the Chumash there is a transition that the psukim that we read this past Shabbos seem to be suggesting. And it may be that there is a connection to Kadshim in that as well. And just to look at the psukim again, this is in Perek Yud Beis, in Pasuk Chaf, and Chaf Aleph, Ki Yarchiv Hashem Elokecha Es Gevulcha, Kesher Diberlach, V'yamar Ta'och Lavasar, Ki Sav Nafshecha Le'achol Basa, B'chalavas Nafshecha To'chol Basar. You have expanded boundaries, you're coming into the land, something is different, and you're going to desire meat. Ki Yirchak Mimcha Hamakom, Asher Yivcha Hashem Elokecha Lashum Shmo Sham. You are no longer surrounding the Mishkan, you are now at some distance from the Mishkan. In that context, we're told, Zavachta mipkarcha mitzoncha, asher nasan Hashem locha, kasher tzivisicha, v'yachalta b'sharecha, b'cholavas nafshecha. So there is, as we started to discuss, a machlokas that surrounds this set of psukim. Machlokas appears later in the parak, Daf Tezayin Amid Beis, and Yud Zayin Amid Aleph. where there is a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva as to what exactly is being changed here, what are we transitioning into, that according to Rabbi Yishmael, basar taiva was prohibited until now. It was asur to eat meat just for your own desire, just for your own enjoyment. Basar taiva is a way of saying basar chulin, that meat outside the context of karbanos was prohibited. We see it's not 100% true. We're talking here really specifically about animals that would have been royal hakrava, but at least in that context, to eat them just because you're interested in eating meat, that was prohibited. And it's only when coming into Eretz Yisrael that that was changing. While Rabbi Akiva had what seems to be a completely different perspective, a different focus, and he said that essentially it's coming to us or something. That in the Midbar, not only was it permissible to eat basar taiva, but it was easier to do than it is now, because they didn't have all the rules of Shechita, they just had Nechira. And we talked a little bit about whether Nechira has its own parameters, let's assume that it does, but still not as demanding as Shechita, and it was specifically coming into the land that now Shechita is obligatory. And it's interesting here, it's a question how we paskin. It's a question why it matters how we paskin. This is talking about the past. The Rush, if you take a look over here, the Rush has an interesting discussion about why he thinks it matters, la halacha. But Rashi and Chumash quotes the idea of Abba Midbar Nasalham Basar Chulin. Elim came Makdishim Makriva Shlomim. That in the Basar, in the Midbar, Basar was only permitted in the context of Shlamim, so that's what was changing. So he is apparently here citing the view of Rabbi Yishmael, and yet the Rambam assumes the view of Rabbi Akiva. We have to figure out whether it makes a difference, maybe practically, as if you take a look at the Rush, you see his discussion, but presumably also there is a hashkafic difference, and it's interesting how they could have such seemingly opposite views of what's going on here. Rabbi Yishmael saying it's coming to permit something that was not yet permitted, and Rabbi Akiva saying it's coming to essentially obligate and aser something that was not yet the case beforehand. And presumably there is something in common that links these two positions, even though they seem to be very different from each other. It's also very noteworthy that the pasuk here mentions taiva a number of times in a way that doesn't seem to be as negative as we sometimes use it. We have to figure out exactly what it does mean. It seems like it's either neutral or positive in the language of the Gemara and in the pasuk that it comes from. We saw the pasuk here says a few times, Kisava nafshecha lachal basar, b'chalavas nafshecha tochal basar. So you have taiva and avas nafshecha, and b'chol avas nafshecha coming again in the next pasuk. And how do you relate to that idea of taiva, which is what we're normally railing against? We're told that the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, taiva motziyim es ha'adam min ha'olam, and taiva is a bad thing. But here there's a Gemara in our Masechta Daf Pei Daled Amud Aleph. When I take a look, it's four lines before the wide lines in Pedalad Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Ki Yarchav Hashem Lokecha Es Gevucha, Limda Torah Derech Eretz, Shlo Yochal Adam Basar Elo Teyavon. That if you have Teyavon, you have Taiva, good, otherwise not. Apparently there's something worse than that. And that's also what seems to be conveyed from the Rambam in Hilchos Deis. So we have a lot we need to try to figure out. So far, so good.
Okay. What's the question we're doing?
We're trying to understand, what does taiva mean here? Is taiva a good thing, a bad thing, a necessary thing, a tolerated thing? Is basar something we're supposed to be eating, something we're allowed to eat? What does it have to do with karbanos? What does it have to do with this change from coming into the land? Now things are different. How are they different? Are they different in two opposite ways? Is that what Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael are saying? Or is there something that brings together these seemingly different points? Okay, so far so good. So let's try to consider these questions one at a time, and then hopefully all together also. first of all, is the Torah permitting Basar reluctantly, enthusiastically, neutrally, somewhere in the middle? So here you have a range of opinions. There are those who understand that it's not so ideal. We have a complicated history with the Heter Basar, both in the past and in the future. Was not permitted to Adam HaRishon, was permitted to Noah. Here we see a machlokes about how we related to it in the Midbar. We'll talk later about different visions of how we relate to it in the future. There is a beautiful essay about this, the Sefer Meshuv Nefesh by our chaver Rabbi Eliav Silverman, Shlita, which I would recommend highly, not only because the Sefer published by Reitz Press, but also because it's a wonderful Sefer with a lot that's relevant to the Chulin. So he has a nice discussion there about the history and some of the concepts behind the idea of being able to eat basar. Has also got a very nice piece about the Shchita as a mitzvah you should also take a look at. But among the opinions that you find is that essentially this is a concession. So in the Sefer HaIkarim, he writes that the heter of Shchitas Basar is basically Dibre Torah Keneged Yetzahara, like we find, we'll read next week, regarding the Eishas Yifas Torah, that it's something that's very not ideal, but the Torah feels that there has to be some acknowledgement of the overwhelming force of the Yetzahara, which could otherwise get out of control. And that maybe that's the theme here. That's what the Sefer Yireim seems to convey. Rabbi Silverman points out over there that the Ramban actually, in his commentary to Chulin and Daf Yud Aleph, understands like that also, that it's a Dibra Torah Keneged Yetzahara. Remember my father, Zichron Levracha, whenever he would have a little piece of cake, he would say, Dibra Torah Keneged Yetzahara. It's a mentality here. It's intentional. So this whole idea of... this whole idea that it has to, we have to acknowledge that the Yetzirah otherwise could get out of control. So there are those who understand it like that, and it's essentially a concession. So that could be what the Torah is talking about here when it refers to Taiva, saying, listen, the Taiva is a reality of life, and we have to give a context for it. So, okay, so we tolerate it. And if you look at the Kli Yakar over here, the Kli Yakar on the Pasuk, so that's how he understands these references to Taiva, essentially, that's what's going on. At the other extreme, so you have the view of Rav Sajagon. Rav Sajagon, as interpreted by Rav Ruchum Fishel Perlo in his commentary to a very, very extensive commentary we spoke about last week, is a very, 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 very in-depth analysis of the otherwise short presentation of Rav Sajagon. So Rav Ruchum Fishel Perlo understands that Rav Sajagon sees this as a mitzvah, that one should eat meat, and that the fact that it is connected to the Taivas Adam to do so creates actually an obligation, which is a fascinating idea, admittedly a minority position, but I think it has hashgafic implications as well that we have to try to figure out. And he explains there of Perlo that this is presumably connected to the idea that we find in the end of Yerushalmi Kiddushin, that we are also litenes adin, that we'll have to ultimately account for what we did not benefit from in this world, that which is permissible and available to us, we are supposed to make use of, and if we fail to do so, so then there's some kind of a cheshbon that's going to have to be accounted for, and there's something that's missing. Just to connect this to this week's Parsha, so now we're talking about Re'eh that we read this past week, but in Parsha Shoftim, so we have the prohibition of Bal Tashchis, that we're not supposed to destroy things. And there is a interesting discussion to be had about what exactly is the nature of that iser. Why does the Torah tell us not to destroy things? What exactly is the message there? And one theme that you find in some of the Rishonim, and perhaps in the Psukim, is that which is available for us to benefit from and is not prohibited, we are supposed to benefit from. And the Torah has the language, mimenu tochal, that instead of destroying the tree, we should eat from it. And some of the Rishonim understood it's actually a mitzvah. That's actually an obligation. And as Rav Perlow brings this also, that's something which maybe is a parallel theme here, that there is a positive religious value, not only a concession, but a positive religious value in availing yourself of this. While everyone else is somewhere in the middle. And it's not necessarily a grudging concession, and it's not necessarily a mitzvah either, but it's simply a heter that if one wants to eat meat, the Torah is saying, okay, here's how we do it, and these are the rules. So within that, to consider the machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, which really seems to be coming from two different directions. And if you look at the Gemara, you look at the Tosfos, you see they really do seem to be coming from two different places halachically, and yet they seem to also revolve around some common point. So what exactly is going on with that? So there's a nice sicha about this from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. They recently published beautiful presentations of the sichas Lubavitcher Rebbe, which would otherwise have been very hard to access for the rest of us who don't have the ability to wade through all of the printed sichos. So a few years ago, they came out with some very nice presentations of the sichos in an organized fashion. And now they just recently came out with a second round. So there's six volumes, three on Chumash and Moadim, and then do it all over again. So in the second round, so there is a sicha about this in Parshas Re'eh. And the Rebbe discusses this point. I'm not going to say it exactly the way he says it, but it's similar to the way he presents it there. That essentially, this past week's parsha, that essentially the Jewish people are transitioning now from the life in the Midbar, where it was a purely spiritual existence, and they are entering into the land, where it's a different kind of life, where they're not going to be fed from food from the sky, but they're going to have to make the lands work. They're going to have to actually engage with the physical world and elevate that with a spiritual attitude. It was a whole different existence. There's an interesting essay about this. Dr. Schatz wrote an article in Parshas Shlach, not about this point, about meat, but about the difference between the Midbar and the entrance into Eretz Yisrael. If I remember correctly, he quoted Lubavitcher Rebbe in that context as well. There are many very different perspectives as to what the concern of the Meraglim was about, what exactly was the attitude towards going into the land and leaving the Midbar and taking on a whole different kind of existence. So Dr. Schatz wrote an article about that where he surveyed the different positions, and I think the Lubavitcher Rebbe was a part of that discussion also. So here it's relevant presumably as well, that as we're going to leave this very Kodesh existence essentially, and this very purely spiritual existence, and enter into a more complicated life where it's basically about taking the physical world and elevating it. So now these points become more relevant. And with that, there is a tzad hashava between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. That Rabbi Yishmael is essentially saying that once upon a time, our life was all kachin. So everything in the Midbar was all around the Mizbeach, and the only time we'd eat meat would be in the context of Shlomim, as Rashi phrases it here in his commentary to Chumash. And now we're going to lead a life that has a Kodesh and Chol. We're going to lead a life that has the material world as a part of it also. So we have to recognize that we need an attitude, we need a mahalach towards the Chol, and that's what these psukim are indicating. And perhaps Rabbi Akiva's position is also connected to that, that essentially saying that as we are now going to engage in the material world, so we need to make sure, all the more so, that we have a Kodesh sensitivity, and the mitzvah of Shechita, which wasn't necessarily relevant beforehand, outside the context of Kodeshim, now as life is going to evolve, this more complicated blend, so now a mitzvah of Shechita with all of its details and all of its themes is going to be even more important. And essentially what they both come to tell us is that as you take on this existence of a Kodesh and Chol, so there is a greater level of responsibility and a greater level of sensitivity that has to come with that. And presumably, that connects to all of the different themes that we see within this concept. So the idea, first, as we've noted, the idea of Tzar Balei Chaim, that we have to have a greater sensitivity to that. We have to be more aware of the consequences of our partaking in the physical world and who may suffer because of that and what needs to be addressed and how we can make sure to minimize whatever costs there are to other creatures, to other aspects of the world. And presumably that addresses, at least on some level, Yad HaLevi's question, that why is it that the concern for Tzar Balei Chaim is insisted upon only in this context of eating meat and not of other usage of animals or of killing of animals. So presumably one leads to the other, that it's specifically when you are deciding to take the step of eating meat because you want to, that we have to have an elevated sensitivity to what the consequences are and to how to minimize those consequences. And it's not necessarily always going to be true in every other context. So presumably that's also a major part of why this is the case. And it's also true that together with this partaking of the physical world, we also need to have a heightened sensitivity to the effects of consumer culture that we are particularly open to in the modern era, where we have unprecedented wealth and unprecedented material access, and there's so much that we can avail ourselves of. So we need to be very careful to be able to appreciate the very fine distinction between that which can benefit us and can actually enhance who we are and what we're doing in this world, and that which is simply going to be used because it's there, or we're only going to want because it's present. It's a very subtle distinction. And Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, in his commentary here on the Psukim in Re'eh, so he suggests the language to kind of address what we were talking before about taiva. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it okay? What exactly is going on? And we have avos nafshecha here a few times. So he suggests that ava, so that reflection of wanting something, it means that there is a legitimate desire. There is something that you want justifiably, positively, understandably. And some of the usages, like kivra sataiva, is an illegitimate need. And I wonder if it's possible to say linguistically, like when the Torah says hisavu ta'ava, that grammatically the formulation of the word is that there is ave, like Rav Shamshon Farshad was saying, that something you legitimately want. And hisavu means you made yourself want. You created a desire within yourself that wasn't actually there. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe in the Sicha has a fascinating point, which is presented very casually there. But that the man in the Midbar, if you think about it, so the man is this miraculous food, and it provided anything you could ever want, but at the same time, it didn't have any appearance. It didn't look like anything. And we know that that is a major part of what draws people in, all the marketers and the advertisers. And there's a special profession of food photography. So they know how to present things in a way that's appetizing, that makes you want something you wouldn't necessarily otherwise want. So the man didn't have any appearance. The man didn't look like anything. And as he notes, he refers you to Rashi and Shlach, where Rashi and Shlach just has the idea that Halev Roeh, Ayin Roeh, Halev Chomeh, that the eye sees, so the heart wants. So the man in the Midbar provided everything that you would already want. It gives you wondrous benefits, but it's not designed to instill in you something that you don't want. So that idea, that balance, is perhaps very reflective of trying to avoid some of the unsavory elements of consumer culture, which some have put it, this economist Tim Jackson wrote that a lot of today's culture is designed to persuade people to spend money they don't have to buy things they don't need, to make impressions that don't last on people they don't care about. So that's very much the opposite of what we're looking for when we talk about Nenesa Me'olami. We talk about an idea that has a positive value in enjoying what's in this world. So it's a very subtle distinction to be able to know when is it adding to your life, when is all of the gashmius going to be something that's going to give you an increased appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world and his message and allow you to function at a higher level, and when is it taking you in the opposite direction. It's a very, very careful benefit, very, very careful distinction, which perhaps these mitzvos are addressed to as well. The Rosh Yeshiva of Keren Yavne, Rav Goldberg, Zichron Levracha, used to comment. At the time, KBY was known as not having fantastic gashmius. It's different. Things are better now.
Better.
Somewhat better. But, you know, they're never that terrible. But there was a reputation. So there were different... he talked about this a number of times. So things the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that... it's a sikha, it's printed about this in the Sufas Marachas also. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, it says, Kachi darka shel Torah, pasu melech teichel, mayim b'shirim tishta. It says, like, the derech of Torah is, you should have very little, you should just have a little bread with salt, and not such great water. Sounds like that's the ideal. I remember a witness once, somebody said to him, oh, I know that... KBY, that do that on purpose, Pasim Melech Tochel. So he said, no, it's not on purpose at all. And it was consistent with what he used to explain in the drashos, that we have these conflicting attitudes in Chazal, because here the Mishnah is saying Pasim Melech Tochel. But on the other hand, we have the attitudes, like we've mentioned before, that we're going to be called to account for failing to be Nen Me'olam Hazeh. So what's the resolution in between them? So he would explain that the Talmud Chacham is able to recognize what benefits and all the gashmius in the world, what exactly is going to help him lead a more elevated life, but he's not meshubit to it. He's not addicted and he's not controlled by it. So therefore, on the one hand, yes, when it's available, when all the gashmius is able to, the way he describes in the times, is able to go to the wedding and have the wonderful shmorg one night, and then the next night he'd come back to the base medrash and he didn't have all that, he could also live, he could also learn. So the Mishnah says, Kachi darka shel Torah, pasmalach tov. It doesn't mean that you have to have only pasmalach, but it means that when that's what's available, so you're also able to function, you're able to recognize that your enjoying of the physical world is not an addiction, it's not a shibud on you, it's something that you're able to very carefully and appropriately benefit from in the way that is going to be helpful to your spirituality. And he would comment also, in the Sufas Marachas, you can find this discussion somewhere, that the Gemara says that Kola Olam Kulo, the Abbas Kol comes out from Shemayim, and God says, Kola Olam Kulo Nizon Mishum Chanina B'ni, that the whole world is sustained on the merit of son of my beloved Chanina, V'chanina b'ni da'ilo b'kruv echar me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos, that he is able to sustain himself on one carib from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. So she would explain, what's the point of that Gemara? That Gemara is coming to be ironic, that here, oh, the whole world is sustained on his chus, and yet he doesn't need it. He could live without, he lives on just one carib from one Shabbos to the next Shabbos. So he said, no, so the pshat is, so all the gashmius that we have in the world, everything that is provided for us, is here for people like Chanina Bini, or here for the Talmidei Chachamim, who are able to appreciate what exactly it contributes to your life and to your understanding, and how it makes you into a deeper, more sophisticated Oved Hashem. That's why it all exists. And yet, Chanina Bini, maybe not yet, but and, Chanina Bini, he's able to live without it. He could sustain himself on just one carib from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. So that shows that he's the type of person who everything else was created for. That's why he's here, to have such a perspective. But clearly that's a very refined approach, which takes a lot of work. And again, maybe this is what these mitzvos are trying to evoke from us. I think it's also interesting to note, together with this, that there is a statement in Chazal which maybe calls into question a lot of what we theorize when we talk about Tamei HaMitzvos. And the Gemara has a statement, the Chazal of a statement, Lo Nitna Mitzvos Elo Litzarif Es Habrios. That the mitzvos are here only to purify us, only to refine us and to discipline us in our behavior. Almost suggesting as if we don't have to look for other reasons behind them, but just the very act of having controlled, regulated behavior is itself a benefit. So I wonder if it's significant that when the Gemara and the Chazal have that statement, so the example they actually give is Shechita. It says, does Kadosh Baruch Hu really care whether you shech this way, you shech that way? Well, nitna ha-mitzvah se'elet sarif es-abrios. So perhaps it's intentional, it's precise that this is what's being invoked, that it's specifically in a context like this, when we're going to avail ourselves of what looks like a purely physical benefit. So there, all the more so, we have a concept of discipline that's imposed upon this, and it is not coincidental that the Rambam puts Hilchos Shechita in Kedusha, that is a message here, that all the more so, when you're involved in this kind of activity, so we need to have a sense of discipline and a sense of refinement. And this also connects back to the idea of a connection to kachin, right? The idea that the mentality of kachin should come with us even in the context of chulin. Chulin is embedded within Seder kachin, that the concept and the thought awareness of a life of Kedusha has to transfer even into the more mundane activities, and that also becomes even greater a responsibility when that's indeed the part of life that is the focus at the moment, when the Chol is in front of us. So the mentality of Kedushim is all the more important. And perhaps it's also worth noting and recognizing in this context that our relationship to meat and to wine, the basar and yayin, is meant really to reflect its role in kachim, in the karbanos. And the Gemara says in Bava Basra that after the churban, there were those who swore off meat and wine, and were told also that they wanted to try to get everyone to stop eating meat and wine after the churban. It didn't work. People weren't able to sign on to this. But this is relevant also to the 9 days. And I think we may have mentioned in some context last year, but it was trying to be Malamed Chus on the Hanhagas of Klal Yisrael. So it was just the 9 days a few weeks ago. So many of you may have partaken in Siyumim during the 9 days and had some meat. So if you're familiar with the literature on this topic, so there's a very mixed attitude. There are those who are very uncomfortable with siyumim that take place during the 9 days, that are siyumim that are scheduled take place during the 9 days, and hope they should be minimized or eliminated. And there are others who are much more comfortable with the notion of siyumim taking place during this period of time. And to be Malamed Tzchus on this and Hagel Klal Yisrael, I think there is a affirmative message within them, in addition to Avos HaTorah, its own inherent positive messages. But the idea of abstaining from meat and wine during the 9 days, it's not just an Avelus kind of idea. An Avel in Shiva is allowed to eat meat and wine, not during Aninus. And Aninus is actually a concept which is rooted in Kachin. And the idea of abstaining from meat and wine during the 9 days, in addition to, okay, we're less happy without meat and wine, but it reminds us that the ideal place for meat and wine is in the Kedusha context. And while we're bereft of the Beis HaMikdash, so then maybe we shouldn't be having meat and wine all year round, but especially during the 9 days when we're more sensitive to the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, or we want to be more sensitive to the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, so then this becomes a more important attitude. So when we have a Sudas Mitzvah during the 9 days, we make a Siyum, so perhaps the message is that we're saying we want to go back to that stage where meat and wine is associated with mitzvah, associated with Kedusha, and that halavai, we should be able to have it in that context. So it's not simply, it's not like a break from the 9 days. It's not like we create these spaces where the 9 days is not on our minds, but we're saying this is the positive, aspirational component of the 9 days, that we hope that we'll be able to have meat and wine in that environment of Kedusha, and that during this time, it should be even more in our minds as values. I think that's perhaps part of the message also. It's also interesting to consider, so what exactly does the future hold for meat? And considering all of these mixed feelings that we have, you know, is there a goal of vegetarianism, or is there a maila to it? And if you look in, Rabbi Silverman Sefer, he has many different perspectives on this as well. And he notes there the often quoted position of Rav Kook, that Rav Kook is discussed as his approaches to vegetarianism. There were some who claimed he himself was a vegetarian. I think his family denies that. But he has a vision that ultimately in the Messianic era, we won't be involved in killing animals, not for our own consumption, and not for karbonos either, that the karbonos of the future will be menachos. And that's how he understands the pasuk that we say every day, in Shemoneh Esrei, we say, v'arva l'Hashem, minchas Yehuda b'Yerushalayim, that we anticipate the time when the menachos will be pleasing to God, apparently leaving out the zvachim. So he understood that there is this vision of a future where we're not going to be killing animals. This is presumably tied in to the absence of death to begin with. You know, there are those who, it's the sources in Chazal that indicate, you know, why was Adam HaRishon not allowed to eat meat? Because we weren't killing anything. Nobody was, no death, nobody's dying, so we don't kill animals to eat them. And the whole concept was one that was foreign. So then the question is, okay, so maybe after the chait, he should be able, when he was then cursed to die, to be mortal, so then maybe then basar should have been permitted. And the explanation is chayte nisker. He shouldn't reward the sin. So if all of a sudden meat was going to become mutter because of the aveir of Adam HaRishon, so that would be a big reward. Imagine telling him, if you right now you can only eat fruit, but if you eat the wrong one, we'll let you eat meat. That's a bad message. So Adam HaRishon was not permitted. But you see the connection between a lack of death for humans and a lack of killing animals and an avoidance of killing animals. So perhaps that's also a part of the Messianic era, if one signs on to the way Rav Kook understood it, but that's part of the message. But then one might come to the conclusion, okay, so then maybe we should be a vegetarian now. But Rav Kook is also quoted as saying that, no, it's not for now, because it's a complicated message. And that we know, we often see, that sometimes other themes get grafted on to the whole vegetarianism approach. And one could come to the conclusion that people are no better than animals, or are not any higher than animals, and that is going to be a denial of our mission and our unique role in the world. So we don't want to let people have that impression. So again, becomes a very nuanced, a very balanced message that, yes, there is a place for our partaking of the spiritual world in a way that elevates us, in a way that gives us a more nuanced perspective. And yes, we also do have to recognize that our sensitivity to Tzar Balei Chaim and to all the other concerns does not mean that people are equal to animals. We have to be very cognizant of the elevated role and the enhanced mission that people have in this world over animals. And keeping those all in balance is very tricky. And perhaps that's the complex message that we have from these mitzvos. And we'll just maybe add also, maybe al pidar chadrosh, maybe it's more than that. But it's also interesting to note that there is a source in Chazal, which is in the Sifri, but the earlier Torah Tumim is, of course, in the Torah's Konim, but here in this highly recommended enhanced edition, so it has a more accurate reference to it. So that when the pasuk begins, Ki yarchev Hashem elokecha es gvulcha, that God will give you these more expanded boundaries. So the quote from Chazal here is, Amra Torah, asei mitzvah hamura be'inyan, shebizchara yarchev Hashem es gvulcha. That you should fulfill this mitzvah that's mentioned here, that in that schar you will have even wider borders, you'll have more. So what exactly is the message of that statement? So presumably what it is, what's the mitzvah here? The mitzvah seems to be the mitzvah of Shechita, the disputed mitzvah status that the Rishonim weren't all sure is a mitzvah. But perhaps what the message of the statement in Chazal is, that the greater sensitivity you have to the themes of this mitzvah, so then the more ready you are to be able to encounter the world in all of its complexity and all of the mixture of Kodesh and Chol, essentially what the Rosh Yeshiva said about Hanina Bini, that because he's somebody who has that elevated understanding, because he is somebody who has that kind of sensitivity, and he could live on almost nothing from 1 week to the next. So because of that, Kol Olam Nizon, everything that is provided for the world is given for that kind of perspective, is given to that kind of an attitude, and particularly as students here at Yeshiva University, where we're hopefully given the kelim, to be given the tools, to be able to encounter Kodesh and Chol, to be able to deal with and to engage with the various messages and elements of the world. So all of these themes of Shechita and the Psukim that surround it become even more important, become something which hopefully we have an even greater sensitive to, and maybe here Al Pidarach Hadrosh, but that's what the next pasuk is saying, Ki Yirkach Mimcha Hamakom, when you're not necessarily only around the Mizbeach, when you have to take a few steps away from the Mizbeach and live a life that involves aspects of Chol also, so all the more so this becomes a more important concept. All of these principles of Shechita, whether it's Tzar Balei Chayim, whether a sense of discipline, whether a sense of perspective, a sense of recognizing what is helpful gashmias and what is a distraction, so all of that becomes a greater priority and a greater value. So I think hopefully as we continue in our Zman, and we'll get more into the Lumdus, God willing, tomorrow, but bringing all of these perspectives to the forefront is a very crucial message for us starting our year here. So just to quickly sum up what we spoke about, so we discussed that there are themes of Tzar Balei Chayim which are clearly discussed in the Rishonim as a reason for Shechita, although, as was questioned, why it's only going to be relevant when we're eating from the Shechita, that's something that we needed to explain a little more. And we saw also that there are aspects of separating the animal from the dam, which the Psukim also continue to discuss, and the Sefer HaChinuch emphasized, and also the linkage to Kadshim, as the Ramban here in Parshas Re'eh and the Sefer Yireim and others draw that linkage. And we saw the Machlokas in the Gemara about what is the message of the Psukim in Re'eh of something happening in the context of Shechita, Rabbi Akiva's position that it's coming to prohibit Nechira, and Rabbi Shmuel's position that it's coming to allow Basar Taiva, and how do we pass again? Does it matter? This is a past tense issue. We saw Rashi focusing on one view, the Rambam focusing on another view, and mentioned, alluded to the Rashi's halachic nafkaminas. So we tried to figure out what to do with all of that. And the repeated references to Taiva and the Gemara in Chulin saying that one should only eat L'tei Avon. Is Taiva a good thing, a bad thing? Is there something worse than Taiva? Is it being tolerated? All of those were things we considered. So we noted that there were many who seemed to understand eating meat as a concession, the Sefer Yireim and the Ramban and Chumash and the Kliyokar over here, that Taiva means, okay, Dabach, you have a Taiva, so this is something that we have to tolerate. There were others who saw it the opposite extreme, Rav Sadrug as a positive mitzvah, tif baser, in the spirit of Nenesa Me'olami and Memeno Tochol in this coming week's parsha. And that was the other extreme, and most fell somewhere in the middle, that this is telling us how it's mutter. We're not telling you to do it or not do it, but that this is how it is going to be acceptable. And then we considered the Lubavitcher Rebbe Sicha, we said a little differently, about the question of what is the common element between these two apparently opposite views, of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. And the suggestion was that going from the Midbar, where everything was taken care of, to a Eretz Yisrael where we're going to be responsible for the land and have to make things happen. So that requires different sensitivities. On the one hand, maintaining an attitude towards Chulin that wasn't necessary when we were closer to the Mishkan, and also a higher sensitivity, a Shechita as opposed to Nechira, that had to be a part of the point. And we said overall that this whole new phase is going to require greater sensitivity than otherwise. On the one hand, to the Tzar Balei Chaim issue, so to address the Adalevi's question, also the overall avoidance of consumer culture, of wanting things just because they're there, or just because we're made to want them. And we noted that was Shamshon Fall Hirsch's interpretation of Aveh. Maybe we could build on that and say Hisavu Taiva is when a person tries to make himself want something he doesn't necessarily really need, and Lubavitcher Rebbe's point that the mind didn't have any appearance to it, and therefore even though it could be anything you want, but it wasn't going to draw you in artificially. And we discussed the Rav Goldwich's attitude towards the balancing of the different sources in Chazal, Pasul Melech Tochol, that yes, there is a tremendous value to the permitted gashmius of the world, but we have to be able to see it for that value and not be addicted to it. So the Mishnah is saying that even when only pas b'melech tochel is the possibility, still the Talmud Chacham is able to learn, and that's what the Chazal mean when they say that Chanina Bani is the reason for all the gashmis of the world, and yet he doesn't seem to need it, meaning he can live without it, but therefore he's able to appreciate it when it's there. And then we spoke also about the fact that there is a source in Chazal that the mitzvahs are really given for discipline, letzarifis abrios, to create a refined personality. The fact that that's mentioned specifically in the context of Shechita may also be interesting, and we discussed the notion of a linkage to Kadshim, and that the mentality of Kadshim should be able to be brought into a Chulin environment is also one of the themes here, and the fact that really Basar V'Yayin was associated with the Beis HaMikdash, and that there were those who wanted to get rid of it completely after the Churban, and the fact that during the 9 days we abstained from Basar V'Yayin is not simply an issue of Avelos, and Avel and Shiva doesn't have this din, but it's about the Churban, it's about recognizing that this is missing, so we keep it out of our personal lives as well, at least for that 1 week of the year. So the notion of siyumim during the 9 days, we suggested we melamed zchus on that concept that it's a aspirational statement that we look forward to a time when our consumption of meat and wine is specifically in the context of a mitzvah. And then we discussed also the question of vegetarianism, and what role does that have, and the whole history with Adam HaRishon, and Rav Kook's perspective that the Messianic era will not involve killing animals either for Chulin or for Kadshim, but at the same time he doesn't recommend that for the pre-Messianic era because it's a complicated message, and we don't want one to get the misimpression that animals and people are equal, and therefore we have to maintain this careful balance. And we suggested particularly as part of our Yeshiva University experience that we're engaged in this balance. You have to be very careful to keep all these themes. And we noted two indications from the Pasuk. One, the idea of Ki Yarchiv Hashem Lokech Es Gvulcha, and the Medrash that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you more of a Harchavas Agvul, specifically when you do this mitzvah, that we're more ready for more Gashmias when we have this attitude at its most refined point. And that the Pasuk continuing of saying, Ki Yirkach Mimcha HaMakom, that here more Al Pi Derech HaDrosh, that when you take a few steps away from the Mishkan, it becomes a greater imperative to be able to have that mentality. So hopefully this gives us some context to the various shitas of whether shechita is a mitzvah or a matir or somewhere in between. And there's still what to figure out about what this tells us about our mission of Hakol Shochtin, of who is in and who is out. And God willing, we will continue with that tomorrow. Everyone should have a wonderful Labor Day. That means practically. Do all the malachas.